Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar. And on Twitter at CFLAR Big Cats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve. I may sound different to you this time, but it's because I'm actually in the studio here today with Simba as opposed to on the phone.
Glad to actually have you here.
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks.
We've had some new developments with regards to the new facility.
Yeah, so give us an update of what's going on.
Well, when we last spoke, we were getting ready to put in some roads, and now I'm happy to report that our roads are actually in.
Hey, we got roads!
We do. It's a really great accomplishment. They have cleared the fire roads as well as the central access roads to the facility and put down the crushed concrete that is going to make up those pathways. And we're very excited to see this significant change take shape.
Did you go out to there and get to see them play with the big crushing concrete machines and stuff?
We did, and actually what we have is fine concrete, so it actually looks like dirt, but when you pick it up and crush it between your fingers, you can see that it's actually very finely pulverized concrete.
Now, how can you tell the difference?
You'd be surprised at how unique concrete actually smells. That actually surprised me. You can smell the difference pretty clearly.
Oh, that's interesting. I could see that. I know that concrete does have a certain smell, that's for sure.
And when you crush it up and it can float in the air a lot easier, you can certainly get a full nose.
So is that going to cause a little bit of a dust cloud when people are driving down it?
Well, the good news is no, because they brought out water trucks as well as tamping equipment, which is just basically a vibrating roller. So as they're wetting it and pushing it down, it is compacting and it's going to stay porous, which is going to be great, so we won't have water in the roads. But it will also be nice and hard, and we will only have to do maintenance every once in a while.
Well, that'll be nice. Hopefully it won't cause too many pothole issues.
We don't expect that much traffic on it. Okay. In fact, because, of course, it's a fire road and only going to be used for accessing the center of the facility in the event of medical issues or moving cats in and out of the facility, we shouldn't really see a lot of action on those roads. But the mere fact that they are there is showing some great progress. We're going to be happy to share that with everybody.
That's great. What about roads to the facility? Those are all good and ready to go?
Well, our main road to the facility is actually 441, because 441, it literally runs right across the front of the facility. There's not a lot of road into the facility that we actually need.
Oh, that's good. Okay. Any other updates from the facility then?
Well, other than that, just to follow up, Chante has done quite well. He is back to his normal happy self.
Are you saying he's not a happy cat?
Well, he is always a happy cat in his own mind. I think that he's only happy when he's giving us a hard time.
I see. That makes him happy.
That seems to make him happy.
Well, whatever works.
Absolutely. We'll do anything to make our cats happy. That's the best we can do.
Well, I'm glad to hear that Chante is doing well.
Indeed. We also had Doc up this weekend again for some other procedures.
Well, what was that all about?
Well, we actually had a procedure with one of our cougars who had been developing a little bit of slowness recently and unwillingness to eat. And so we just wanted to check her out, make sure that everything was kosher. So she had an enema and was clear, because, of course, we were very concerned about impaction.
Well, you know, you just mentioned cougar. You know what that means.
Uh-oh.
Yes, it does. I'm sorry, but you're going to have to do it.
All right. Well, we introduced it last week, and we're back with it again.
15 freakishly fast, fun cat facts.
Common name, cougar.
Genus and species, Puma concolor.
Subspecies, 7.
Average shoulder height, 2 to 3 feet.
Average body length, 4 to 6 feet.
Average weight, 110 to 220 pounds.
Lifespan, 10 to 20 years.
Land speed, 40 to 50 miles per hour.
Conservation status, least concern.
Native lands, North and South America.
Key physical feature, long tail and larger hind legs.
Likes solitude and jumping.
Dislikes swimming.
Jumping ability, 18 feet high, 40 to 45 feet long.
Primary diet, carnivore generalist, will eat any animal it catches, 3 to 6 pounds per day.
Cougars at CIFAR are Kukla, Cheyenne, Kekega, and Ishna Toyela.
So how is the cougar doing?
She's doing quite fine. We were glad to find out that there was no blockage involved. She just apparently wasn't interested in eating for a little bit. And of course, noting that cats in general are finicky picnickers and our cats do eat on a regular basis, for them to skip a meal once or twice is not usually a bad thing. But especially with the cougars, who generally do eat immediately, we know that that's something that we get concerned about when she decides she doesn't want to.
But she's doing okay, apparently.
She's doing okay, and we'll be giving you updates as we learn more.
Absolutely. Besides, we want to hear those fast, fun cat facts again.
Yes, and I guess we're going to have to do another one because the second cat that we have to talk about is Wowichula. She's one of our tigers.
Oh, cool. The tiger one, too. All right.
Yeah, we get a double whammy this week, so...
All right. Now, get a good deep breath. Here we go.
All right.
15 freakishly fast, fun cat facts.
Common name, tiger.
Genus and species, Panthera tigris.
Subspecies, 6.
Average shoulder height, 2.5 to 4 feet.
Average body length, 7 to 10 feet.
Average weight, 400 to 600 pounds.
Lifespan, 15 to 25 years.
Land speed, 30 to 40 miles per hour.
Conservation status, endangered.
Native lands, India, Siberia, and China.
Key physical feature, stripes, even on the skin.
Likes swimming and solitude.
Dislikes being surprised or annoyed.
Jumping ability, 12 feet high, 20 to 30 feet long.
Primary diet, carnivorous, can eat up to 75 pounds in one sitting. At CIFAR, they eat 7 to 13 pounds per day.
Tigers at CIFAR are you ready for this? Angel and Paui Ape.
Chanska Joaquinyan, Chaisha, Charger.
Freedom, Gabriel, Helene.
Hookstowin, Honey, Hota.
Ichamna, Inila, Iotaka, Tatanka.
Maki, Mapia, Michael.
Michelob, Masunkala, Nathaniel.
Nunian, Ohini, Ohitika.
Omashte, Quinn, Raja.
Raz, Wakua, Wachasha Wakan.
Wanaji, Woozer, Wowichula. All right, so Wowichula actually ended up having what looked like a lump that appeared towards her belly, right midline over one of her teats, and we were concerned about what this growth was, especially when it suddenly started to bleed on us. So we had to knock her down and have it removed because it was really looking like some kind of cyst, perhaps a mammary cyst.
That's interesting. So you weren't sure what was going on, but was she showing signs of it being painful?
She wasn't really slowing down all that much, but this was such an obvious anatomical deformity that it was not a question. We needed to get in there and find out what was going on. It was probably about 2.5 pounds worth of a tumor that we pulled out. It was around her mammary gland, but she seems to be okay at this point. It was a relatively clean resection, but it did have a couple of feeder veins that were going to it, as would be expected for that kind of tissue.
Was it a cancerous tumor or not?
We'll just have to wait until Doc Martin gets back with the results, and we'll find out what the actual source was. But Wowichula, because she has already been spayed, doesn't have or should not have some of that extra equipment that would produce some of those extra hormones. So this is just a curious scenario that we'll...
So it's unexpected, obviously, that this would form...
Very unexpected.
Cat.
Very unexpected, but it's not something that's unheard of. We just need to find out what the results are, and we're all waiting with bated breath.
Bated breath is not a good term for people working with big cats.
Yeah, I thought you might appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to CIFAR Sounding. We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, my name is Phyllis Park. I am the events coordinator for Central Florida Animal Reserve. Here are some of the events that we have coming up. Birthday presented by WJRR. It's a rock music festival on April 12th. This is a Saturday. Gates opening at 11 a.m. at the Central Florida Fairgrounds. The event runs until around 11 p.m., but CFAR staff will be there until around dark. We will be selling CFAR merchandise and promoting our organization, soliciting new volunteers for our organization, since this will be fairly close to our new home. Sebastian will be there meeting old friends and making new friends. The next event that's coming up will be our Member Appreciation Day on May 18th, which is a Sunday from 12 until 5 p.m. This is an opportunity to meet the CFAR staff, see the cats in their home, to ask all of your questions and see what's going on with our future as well as with the cats. We hope to see you at this upcoming event. Come out and see us. Thank you for supporting CFAR.
Thanks, Phyllis. Enjoy this musical interlude. CFAR Sounding will be right back. You're listening to CFAR Sounding with host Simba Wiltz and Asla Konser.
So, why don't we get into our main topic of the show today?
Lots of discussion points about this. It's a question that comes up frequently whenever I'm talking to people. It's about cats and animals in general in captivity.
Absolutely. There's a lot of discussion, you can see that online and such, about whether it's a good idea to have animals in captivity or not. And of course, there's a lots of arguments for and against. Actually, I recently went out on debate.com, which anyone can actually post information onto, and they had that question up there about animals in captivity. And it looked like, at least at this point, the positive and negatives were even. There was 50-50 for and against.
I can understand that. Animals in captivity is a really touchy subject for all of us, because I know that there's a proverb that says that if you want to really get the idea of how strong a society is, you look at how it treats its animals. And we have a strong attraction to all animals, just as people, we generally do. And in the interest of disclosure, I should say that it's a subject that we struggle with at CFAR constantly, trying to make sure that we have that appropriate balance between providing everything that the cats need while recognizing that we're never going to be in the same situation as they would be in the wild.
But the point is to try to make it more of a home rather than an actual cage.
Yes, and I actually heard a very interesting radio show recently done by Radiolab. I'm sure you're familiar with that, right?
Yeah, actually, I listened to that same show. It just happened to be this week. Honestly, we came up with the idea of the show first and then heard that this week. It was very odd.
And they presented some very interesting research in there with regards to how they can tell whether or not an animal is stimulated in their environment and what that really means in terms of keeping animals in captivity.
Yeah, they did a study. There was a woman named Elizabeth Gould that did a study of monkeys in three different groupings. They had a group A, group B, and group C. Group A were in enclosures that were rather large with lots of toys, lots of other animals to interact with. They had opportunities to forage for their own food. So it was just basically the high end of what you'd want an enclosure to be or a home to be. Group B were in a little bit lesser accommodations in the sense that they also had nice enclosures where they had other animals together, so there was more of a social grouping. But they had less of everything, less toys, less room, few less of the monkeys altogether. But it was still a fairly nice enclosure, just less of what they gave monkeys in Group A. And Group C was where they actually had the more traditional old-time zoo look of the concrete and wire cages type of environment.
Basically a high, middle, and low-class environment.
Yeah, not that we want to class our monkeys that way, but it was an interesting experiment. So,
and the results were very shocking to me, at least.
I was astounded by it, too. Apparently, what they did was they took a few, after letting the monkeys live in these environments for quite a while, they actually took a few individuals from each environment and studied their brains. And what they were looking for was actually neurons and synaptic activity. And if your brain is a healthy and happy brain, you have lots of activity in a what they call a bushier brain, because you have more neurons firing, more activity happening.
It's basically that a brain that is stimulated is going to create new pathways for thought. They're basically going to grow additional neurons, and this is what produces the quote-unquote bushy appearance when they look at the brain patterns.
Because it actually branches. So you get branches and branches, and hence the bushy connection. And they actually studied these brains. Now, I don't know how they studied the brains, if it was by MRI or, you know, any other kind of means, but they actually looked at the brains of these monkeys from the different groups. And the most astounding thing was that between group C, which was the lower class of cage enclosures, and between group C and group B, which were more the middle class, there was anywhere between like a 20 to 40% difference in activity, where the group B monkeys had a much more active and complex and branched and bushy brain than the group C animals did.
And that makes some sense, since group B in their middle class existence was having more toys, more stimulus from their environment. What really shocked me was what happened between group A and B.
Yeah, that was interesting as well. The fact that they looked at the brains between group A and B, and there was virtually no difference.
No difference between that middle and high class. So that enclosure that may have been only a tenth of the cost of the other one ended up having the same level of stimulation as the one that was much less expensive.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about that is that part of the other study they did was they moved an animal from like group C to group B, and to see how long it would take before they would start seeing results. And within 4 weeks of being in the new enclosure, the monkeys would already be seeing increased brain activity and stimulation and already be benefiting from being in a more enriching environment with more social interaction and more toys and all of that.
And the significance of this can't be understated. One of our core competencies that CIFAR is moving towards is going back to taking cats out of bad situations and giving them a better home environment so that they can have the best life they can in captivity. And some have certainly advocated the idea that once a cat is in a bad situation, then they will always be in a bad situation mentally. But extrapolating some of this data, especially with these higher level animals, it is a very hopeful sign that if we can actually get animals out of bad situations, put them in better situations, then they can at least physiologically show signs of rehabilitation.
Well, the other interesting thing, too, is the fact that group A and group B, the high class and the middle class, were so similar, shows that there is some point at which you've reached a threshold where it's enough is enough, so to speak. Kind of an analogy to that is, you know, some people love to have choices. Of course, you like to have choices when you're offered something. But when there's too many choices, it's overwhelming and it doesn't actually help. And so there's a point at which there's a threshold as to where there's just enough choices to make it interesting and enough choices to make it stimulating without it being too much.
Right. And that is astounding. If you overwhelm the brain, then that threshold kicks in and you don't see any further improvement, which goes to show that there is certainly a level at which each animal needs to be stimulated, but overdoing it actually tends to do more for the ones who are doing it than the actual target of the intervention.
I'd like to go back a little bit and talk a little bit about the history of what we call the modern zoo. Today, when you go to zoological parks, which is what they used to be called, by the way, zoological parks, if they became zoo, which is just an interesting tidbit fact, there was a song in 1878 that was Taking a Walk in the Zoo or something like that was the name of the song, but that was where it was first introduced, the term zoo, as opposed to calling it a zoological park. and it stuck. People just loved it. So in any case, going back a little bit to the history of the zoos, many of us remember in our younger days going to zoos, and the animals were in essentially concrete cages, very sterile, with bars. They may have had mates in there with them, so they weren't by themselves, but they weren't particularly appealing looking cages. But they were a way to keep the animals safe, keep the animals clean and sterile, because they could easily clean those concrete cages. And there was nothing in them, in those cages, that could hurt the animals.
It's strange that those enclosures were made in that manner out of actual concern more than out of lack of concern.
Absolutely. It wasn't intended to be, oh, let's just shove this animal in a cage and see what happens. It was really intended to be a way to protect the animal. Now, in the mid-70s, there was a guy who actually was working at the Seattle Zoo, and he was on the borderline. He was one of those borderline guys that felt like, well, I don't know that we really should have animals in captivity, but he also recognized that it's going to happen. People love animals. We need them in captivity for the educational purposes. So rather than working against them, he worked with them, and he actually started working for a zoo. And as it happens, he became the director of the zoo, and he decided to change the enclosures that they were in to give them a better life. At least that's what he thought he could do. He didn't know, because it hadn't been done before. He didn't know how it would work out. But he did work with Diane Fossey, because they actually had gorillas in that particular zoo in Seattle. And Diane Fossey was the only expert on gorillas, having lived with them for the time that she did and logging her time. So he actually invited Diane Fossey to come to the zoo, and he talked to her and tried to find out what was more like the gorilla's actual habitat. And he went about actually constructing a cage for their gorillas in the Seattle Zoo that gave them more of a natural habitat, as opposed to four concrete walls and a cage bar. He gave them embankments with grassy hills and a little creek, some trees. They could see the sky. He actually created a 16,000 square foot enclosure with all these interesting additions to it that had never been done before.
Now you fast forward to today, and everyone expects to see these kinds of enclosures when they go to zoological parks. They are remarkable in their, not only the technology that's become part of it, but also in a lot of the features that come part in it. However, I think that the results of those studies certainly have to be brought up again. They did spend a lot of time and effort trying to create this environment that was going to be similar to what the gorillas might see in the wild. But with modern technology and the modern ways that people build enclosures, we know that there is oftentimes an attempt to try and create that A group, that high-end group, when that may not necessarily be just for the animals.
True. Obviously, the public looking on also want to see the animals in a nice environment. But as we mentioned before, possibly the group B type accommodations are maybe just as good or better than for the animals themselves. But it was interesting that going back to that original person at the Seattle Zoo, his name was David.
Right, David Hancocks.
David was actually told by many other zoo managers not to do this, that it would be unhealthy for the animals because they would not be in their sterile environments. They would not be in an area where they could not get hurt. He was, you know, told that your gorillas are going to go out there and they're going to hurt themselves. They're going to fall from the trees. Things are going to happen and you're going to have to take care of them. But that was the actual thought of the time, that the best way to keep an animal in captivity was in a very sterile and contained environment. So it was just a unique idea to actually say, well, no, let's do something different. And they saw immediate results in the Seattle Zoo. There were gorillas that they had, one in particular that was very ornery and apparently just not a happy gorilla, that was often angry and upset in his just daily life. And once they gave him this enclosure and he and his family were in this enclosure, things changed immediately. He was happier and had a happy life from that point forward. So it's interesting to note, though, that what we see as the modern zoo today really didn't get started until the mid to late 70s.
Now that we are fast forwarding a little over 40 years, now we are into a very different modern environment, and the question is even more relevant than it has been back then.
Well, it's interesting because there are people that feel it's wrong to have animals in captivity, and there are people who see the reasons why it's necessary to have animals in captivity.
In the interest of full disclosure, I will certainly say that I'm one who finds tremendous value, both for society as well as for individuals, in having animals in captivity.
Well, clearly, being part of CIFAR, we'd have to say that's the case. We wouldn't be part of the organization if we felt that having the animals in captivity was just clearly wrong.
However, it does create an unusual situation because it's not a clean leaning towards animals in captivity. If you talk to many people in CIFAR, we put tremendous effort into trying to make sure that all of our residents are happy and interested and engaged, but yet there's always a part of us that really does wish that they could be in the wild.
Yes, I can see that, but of course the animals that we have at CIFAR could never be released to the wild. For one thing, they were never in the wild to begin with.
Yes, and fundamentally, everything that we do today is a result of generations of these big cats being in captivity from way back in the 1800s when tigers and lions and other exotic animals were brought over from their native lands to become part of menageries and zoological parks. So fast forward through the 20th century, and only in this last part of the 20th century, throughout the 70s, suddenly did the question start to arise of, what does this mean for us? Why do we have to have these animals in captivity? The proverbial cat is out of the bag already.
Yes. Interestingly enough, though, if you go back in time, of course, in the Roman times, we slaughtered animals as for fun. We would bring them into stadiums and people would watch just animals being slaughtered. So it's been a long development from that to the point of us now trying to produce enclosures for them that's nice for them, to actually treat them with kindness, and to actually get to the point of saying, well, is it even right for us to encage them at all?
It is, and I think that the debate is important for us to have whether or not, or what we are doing for the cats is the best we can possibly do. But phrasing it in terms of right and wrong tends to boil it down to a choice that none of us really have anymore. And let me qualify that, because the problem exists. And no matter whether someone wants to pretend like it is or isn't, or talk about ideals for what it could be, regardless of any of that, there are going to be big cats in captivity in this country in numbers that may exceed the number that are left in the wild.
Actually, I've seen some studies that show that it is true that there are more tigers in captivity than there are in the wild. But partly that's because their habitat is so degraded to the point where there's not enough habitat for them to be in the wild.
And the habitat that we're trying to preserve for them is under tremendous threat from their native lands. It is a real problem. And it's a problem that we may not be able to solve all the way over here. We have to work through their government. We have to work with the populations that live with the tigers. And that's not immediate enough for everyone here. We've got real problems in this country that are going to seem a lot less immediate than tigers over in a village in India. But having tigers in captivity, having people be able to see them, to walk up to them, to figure it out, gives them a chance to understand the scope of the issue, A, what it is we're trying to save over there, but also the situation that they are in this country. That's all the time we have for this week. Tune in next week when our discussion on animals in captivity continues.
Obviously, animals can be scary. Wild, big wild animals can be scary. And their interactions with people can be deadly.
Eventually, if any animal walks far enough, it's going to run into a fence or into some barrier whereby it's no longer safe.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wiltz. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.